This program was first broadcast on Arrow FM, Wairarapa's only community access media station, and shared on Access Media with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, you're listening to Film Talks On Air. I'm your host, Jane Ross, and my special guest today is Annie Collins. Kia ora, Annie.
Kia ora, Jane. Lovely to be here.
Lovely to be talking to you today. I am very excited to be presenting a retrospective of films that you have worked on over the years. In a very long career in the New Zealand film industry, I can't wait to talk about the selection of films that you've chosen. But for anyone that doesn't know, let's talk about where you come from, Annie. So tell us about that.
Well, I was born in Whakaoriori, Masterton. And in fact, I lived most of the time that I was in Masterton on Te Oriori Road, right across from the hospital. As a child, I got to know Masterton really well. I used to ride horses. I'd do anything to get on the back of a horse. Yeah, it was quite a childhood, really, and a very interesting one because my father was a baker, ran a bakery business, and that meant that he worked most nights and slept most days. So didn't see so much of him. My mum was an especially strong woman, and I was the seventh of her children. And she had those seven children and worked alongside my dad. And
wow.
So they were really, really hardworking people. And I think one of the things that actually characterises becoming part of the film industry in this country is my work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I was literally trained to work.
I think it has stood you in very good stead.
Yes, it has.
Fun fact about that bakery, Annie, because I did some research into this last year and actually found some archival images that showed Magnet Bakery, which of course was right next door to the Regent Theatre.
Yep, exactly. That huge concrete wall of the Regent Theatre was the wall that bounded the driveway down beside Magnet Bakeries down to the bakery at the back. And those were coal-fired ovens down there. This was not electric numbers. This was coal shoveled in, and using the long peels to push the trays of dough into the oven and to pull them out again. You know, the incredible memories of a time that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I'm going to actually tap back into the Wairarapa archive and see what else we can uncover around that era and your bakery and the region. It's really interesting to uncover because that alleyway doesn't exist anymore.
That's right.
Amazing to see how the town has changed over the decades. But what a fascinating start for you with building your strong work ethic with the context of having a movie house right next door to you.
Yes. We didn't get to go there much. We were, you know, I was pretty tiny. I would be about 5 years old when we moved from there because we lived over the shop to in the first years. And I was about 5 years old when we moved up to a big old house back from the road up in Te Oriori. We had paddocks around the house, and so it was a much more a sense of freedom up there.
I bet, yeah. Now, you have had a long five-decade-plus career working in the New Zealand screen industry, both television and film, and music videos. You know, you've been across all kinds of genres. And I want to ask, what was that pathway for you?
Well, it's a pathway that kind of doesn't exist anymore. I left Masterton at age 17 on an American Field Service scholarship to the States for a year, came back at 18, went to work at State Insurance Office. None of my classmates were still in Masterton. They'd all gone to university, but university didn't appeal to me. I went to work at State Insurance within 5 months, I was as high as they would allow a woman to go. So that didn't thrill me too much. Got a job with the AFS office in Wellington and moved down to Wellington. I would have been then about 19. I met the man who would become my husband down there, and I was married by the time I was 20. And I stayed, you know, being a wife and kind of looking at what I wanted to do as work, because I needed something to take the energy that I had. And we travelled a bit as well. Unfortunately, I left the marriage when I was after 6 years, and I came home from overseas and went to the Wellington Polytechnic graphic design course, because it was the only course in the only place in Wellington where I could get more than one lesson a week in life drawing, and which was what really interested me at the time. So that was a 3-year course, and the third year of it, we had a part-time tutor come in who took us through making small film, and we made 2 or 3 films out of our class, and this was 1975, and I appeared to be kind of the only person who was really taken with the editing side of it. I wasn't particularly interested in the shooting, which is what everybody else seemed to be interested in. It was a really boring part of it, and you had to carry heavy equipment all around, so I wasn't that interested.
Mm-hmm.
but the edit, really, I found that quite fascinating. And when we reached the end of the year, that tutor, Pat Cox, who became one of the foremost commercials producers in the country for many, many years, Pat Cox said to me, "What are you going to do when you leave graphic design course?" And I said, "Pat, I don't know. I'm a bloody awful designer." And he said, "I think you should try editing.
Wow.
You show a facility." And I said, "Fine, what do I do?" He told me who to go and see, and I went and saw the National Film Unit and TVNZ and Pacific Films, and nobody was in the least bit interested in taking me on and teaching me. And I went back to Pat and said, because there were no film courses in, you know, tertiary education at all. That hadn't occurred. Those were the only places you could learn. And went back to Pat, said, "Oh, they don't want me." And he said, "Well, look, I am just setting up an independent editing service here in Wellington. I've leased in a flatbed Steenbeck." That was the latest film editing equipment.
Yeah.
"And if you can keep yourself alive, I will train you, because I don't have any clients yet," he said.
and what did that mean, to keep yourself alive?
I did 3 jobs.
Wow.
I did crap graphics, all sorts of small sort of rubbishy stuff that I was capable of. I served up food on plates and downstage.
Mm-hmm.
I also did night service at the James Cook Hotel, and I did life modelling up at Polytechnic, which I had been doing right through the course.
Wow.
And so I worked with Pat most days, every day, and Pat knew everything you needed to know, all the technical stuff concerning film, how to handle the laboratory, all the assisting work, besides being a fine editor himself. And he taught me, and I couldn't have had a better tutor. on that.
Wonderful.
He instilled an enormous sense of making sure that the details had been covered, because it didn't take too long for me to learn that if I was sloppy with something, then when it went into the laboratory, as soon as it crossed the threshold, it would start costing big bucks. And it took only one mistake.
Yeah.
Then I was reined in, you know, and understood the responsibility of working in film.
Yes.
And that was really, really interesting. Now, that was all the technical responsibility, and, you know, as an assistant. And in those days, as an assistant, you were in the room with your editor all the time, and you were actually feeding your editor the shots that they called for. You could be suggesting things to them, but, you know, quite rarely on that. But within months, I was assisting on a couple of the early feature films made around 76, 77. And then the editor, Ian John, of Roger Donaldson's film Sleeping Dogs, came through Wellington and dropped into Pat's premises, and I was there at that time. And Ian was looking for a track layer, somebody to lay the soundtrack on Sleeping Dogs. And, of course, Pat's was the first independent editing service. There weren't independent editors around apart from Ian John himself. Everybody else worked for television, or they were on full-time jobs. And so Ian says, do you know any track layers? And Pat Cox immediately said, oh, Annie can do that. And I thought, oh, what's track laying? And next thing, I find myself in Auckland. Ian shows me the technical process he wants followed, and then I'm laying tracks on Sleeping Dogs, effects tracks on Sleeping Dogs. And that was 18 months after I started with Pat Cox. Now, that sort of, and from there it went on from one director to another.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a time for me of enormous opportunity, because, as I say, there weren't very many other independent available editors around, especially editors who had the sort of training that I had had with Pat. Now, that sort of pathway no longer exists, and it's partly because of, you know, no longer working on film.
Right, yes.
Partly because we're in a digital era now, and assistant editors do an entirely different job from the editor. The editor is the creative person.
Mm-hmm.
Assistant editor is totally technical. Sometimes they get asked to do a bit of, you know, take on a few scenes and do an assembly edit of them for the editor. But that's quite rare.
It really has evolved in with, you know, new technologies that have become available. Roles, you know, have to adapt to the technology. It's the technology innovation that comes first, and then people adapt to the technology. Yeah. I've observed that over the years.
Yeah. And that's what happened for me too. As soon as film, as tape started to take over from film, it's only a period of 2 or 3 years. And then from the tape era, it moved into not straight digitization, but transferring into computers, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And computer platforms. And I remember getting my very first job, which was going to be edited on what is still the Premiere platform, which is Avid. And I rang a colleague and Eric DeBose and said, look, I've got this some job coming up on Monday and I don't know how to turn the avid on. You know, I've never been in front of one before. Can you tell me?
Wow.
And so we went into a facility for on the Saturday, and Eric gave me an hour and kind of showed me how to go backwards, forwards, make a cut. Here's how you turn it on, and here's how you make a sequence. And that was it.
So you learnt on a Saturday and went into the job on a Monday.
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
It was an hour.
Incredible.
For the learning.
Yep. Crash course.
Yep.
Quite literally.
Yeah, yeah. And it's been a bit like that ever since.
With each new
iteration of technology. And basically the technology is upgraded every 6 months or so. And it's not a total upgrade generally, but you still have to be on top of it.
Mm. I want to move now into the retrospective of the films that you have edited, that you've selected specifically for the Wairarapa mm-hmm. Film Festival this year. Mm. I'm delighted to be, you're my headliner, and I'm delighted to actually be screening the films that you've selected. It has been delightful to talk to the people who have produced and directed these films to get their permission, the kaitiaki of these films as well. They've given me lots of insight into you, Annie. For example, the fun fact that Rob Sarkis gave me, that coming from a family of bakers, you still turn up to every film set with baking. That was really cool to know.
Well, actually, I tend not to turn up to film sets.
But, into the editing suite with baking? Yeah, is it that way?
Certainly there's always cake around my edit suite, because I reckon that you can't cut without cake.
There you go.
It just doesn't work.
There you go. So I've mentioned Rob. So one of the films that you've selected is Out of the Blue. Why this film, Annie? Yeah.
Because I think that size says all of it.
Mm.
Because it is crucial in New Zealand, those moments that define communities and nations.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the Blue is one of those moments. And also for me, as an editor, it has that moment for me in amongst all of the material, you know, that I've handled over these decades. And the reason it holds such a place is because of the way that it's basically because of Rob's process in making it.
Mm-hmm.
Such a beautiful community-based process, the respectful and still creative way that he approached this moment in Dunedin's history and in New Zealand's history. And
I think it makes
it so delicate
and so very moving and special.
Yes.
About this.
Yes.
Now I want to say and let everyone know that that this film will be screened at Regent 3 Cinemas on Sunday, the 25th of May at 1:15. Both you and Rob will be there to talk further about this with the audience. Mm. Rob will also be presenting, prior to the screening, a masterclass called Sense of Place. And for me, that was really important, because so many of Rob's films have a location that almost becomes a character that is just so important in his storytelling. So I'm really, really excited. And we've just also included Scarface into the program for this year, particularly for our secondary school students. We're introducing a new schools and cinemas program. A bit of nostalgia for me, because I used to be a teacher, but I also grew up going with my school to the cinema at least once a year, and there was always educational learnings around the films that we saw. So will be doing that, and it's been an absolute delight to get to know Rob, but also present his film to schools and talk to schools about him as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
We also have on selection from you, Gardening with Soul. Now, that must have been an absolute delightful experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gardening with Soul. Now, that's, for me, that's a really interesting piece. And when Jess Feast, the director, came to me to ask for my involvement in it, you know, it's just this film about this little old lady pottering around, you know, chatting with God around her garden, and, you know, what could be interesting about that? But what drew me to it was that that old lady encapsulates all the best of Pākehā culture. And I had been watching a fair amount of the beautiful programs that come up on Māori TV, now Whakaata Māori, and so many portraits of a beautiful kaumātua, and the dignity and the qualities, the human qualities that they had. And I was asking the question, why am I not watching programs on TVNZ that are about people like this?
Beautiful portraits.
Pākehā people, people that we can look up to and understand and appreciate the qualities that they have. And this old nun had them. And that's why I did it, because I wanted to see her and all that she is and represents up on national television, so that Pākehā could see the best of who we are, and to use that as role models, basically.
Fabulous. Another film that you have selected is directed by our mutual friend Paul Wolfram. It's Ngārau o te Whenua, Voices of the Land.
Yeah.
What another lovely sigh.
It's a really interesting one. Because this time we've got a crossover, because the film is about somebody who at that time was quite a hero for Paul. And Paul is an ethnomusicologist.
Yes.
That's what he is. He's also a very fine filmmaker. So he's a Pākehā filmmaker, and he has a Pākehā subject, Richard Nuns. But everybody is talking about taonga pūoro, traditional Māori instruments. And encapsulated in that is the essence of how we nurture for these beauties out of the Māori world and acknowledge them. I'm trying to think of the word. It isn't necessarily, it's not putting everything up on a pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
It's seeing how they open up a different understanding of the world that we live in, and especially the land that we live in. Because Ngārau o te Whenua translates as voices of the land.
Mm.
And Richard Nuns was an extraordinary person. He's very Pākehā, and yet he makes that transition in handling taonga pūoro.
Amazing.
In the manner in which it feels that they should be handled. The whole sense of beginning to understand these traditional instruments and what they open up for us as Pākehā if we care to listen and understand. And Paul Wolfram was able to bring that out of Richard Nuns and get it up on screen.
Incredible. That's incredible. And I'm just going to also say that we also have a music video that we've paired with Ngārau o te Whenua, which is possibly one of the happiest songs, most joyous songs I know, which is Poirier. And it was an absolute delight because I was communicating with the Kaitiaki of Poirier, and that is the Delvania's prime estate, and it's Alicia Bar Prime. Love her. And I was telling her that we were pairing it with Ngāreo Te Whenua, and she just said, I absolutely love this kaupapa, and you have my 100% have my blessing. So this will be on the Saturday night at Regent Three Cinemas at 7:15 paired together. And I think it's going to be a really, really, really joyous night. I do. Celebrating music as well. Yes, so we're all very excited for that. And then your fourth film you described to me as a film that punches you in the face. So Coming Home in the Dark, which was partially shot here in the Wairarapa and potentially one of the most recent films that you have worked on as an editor, you know, in recent times. But tell me about why you chose this film.
I was just thinking immediately, actually, it kind of chose me.
It did? Oh, brilliant.
It's very, very topical, especially at that time. The abuse in state care was hitting the headlines, the whole inquiry into that. And I hadn't necessarily met the director, James Ashcroft, before. This was his first feature, although he's been around film, you know, for some decades and been involved in six short films, short drama films. When he and one of the producers, Mike Minogue, came here to talk with me about it, I kind of said, it's the first question I always ask a director. Basically, what's your kaupapa in translation? Why are you making this film? Both of them had family members who had been subject to state uncare. And they came to me at quite an early stage while the script was still in development. There was enough there to see the strength of it. They had based it on an Owen Marshall short film called Coming Home in the Dark.
Oh, okay.
But they had increased the depth of it enormously by incorporating this uneasy level of institutionalized abuse into it. The script went through a couple more iterations. And one of the things which really intrigued me was that James asked for my input 2-3 times as the script was sort of running through to its final shooting script. And the suggestions that I made, he accepted and incorporated. And that, it's not often that you get the chance to do that or that anybody listens to you as an editor.
Yeah, but, that's exceptional.
But James is a pretty exceptional person. And we also had two other excellent producers on it who shepherded the film through. Yeah, it is a very dark film and it's very much worth having a look at because the sorts of things that happen in it, one or two are quite extraordinary and very confronting, but there are also things that the population of this country are capable of, and I think that we are seeing more and more of that as time goes on.
That's going to be screened on Friday night at Regent Three Cinemas alongside the short film Ru, and both of these films have the same lead actress, Mariama McDowell, who has confirmed she will be joining you at the screenings, Annie. So I'm really, really delighted.
And that's absolutely fabulous.
It is.
Now, the other thing, which is, you know, one of those sort of small, odd connections, is that Mariama's aunt, married my brother, one of my brothers. So I consider Miriama to be family.
Ah, well, she wanted to jump in straight away to be here to support you. So delighted to confirm that. So we're screening both Rue short film and Coming Home in the Dark feature together on Friday night at Regent Three Cinemas. That's Friday the 24th of May. And all tickets are available through Regent Three Cinemas website or phone reservation, or certainly you can pop in and buy in person, but also through the Wairarapa Film Festival website too. Yeah. Annie, as always, it's a delight to talk to you, but even more so, I'm just excited to welcome you back to Wairarapa Film Festival, but to be actually highlighting you in this festival with the retrospective. Everyone that I have spoken to has said this is so wonderful to be celebrating Annie Collins. So ngā mihi nui ki a koe, Annie. I look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you very much, Jane.